Accession number 14982, Mr. J. Brown, reel 19.
Mr. Brown, reel 19. You were describing the NATO attack, Mr. Brown.
Yes. And me and this Welsh lad were just slowly, one being brave, went down a trunk over the trees and that. We kept off from, back from the road. We just, you know, we weighing everything up. Just say, there was nothing to say, actually. But anyway, about halfway down, there's a dirty old broken down farmhouse on the left. Just there was a clearing, like. It was all quiet, like. We moved in, we were well apart, like, so he couldn't get to you at once. And I was studying up what to do. And suddenly there was a little squeaky voice over here, you know, Bjorn or John or Christ? He was that far off, so death. As a real old man. He had one bloody tooth in there. It was like something out of Punch, you know. And he must have been 110 looking at him. And he had watery eyes, and he had the, for an Italian, or so he had the bluest eyes I've ever seen in my life. He's real old, you know, poor old bugger stand there. And he's slavering at the mouth. He didn't know what it was all about. So I said to Jones, he's going to throw a grenade through the window. I said, no, have a look in his neighbourhood in there. There's nobody in, not a soul. Dirty, stinking place. Couldn't speak Italian. He said, Tedeschi, Germans, you know, in Italian. Tedeschi, Tedeschi. Oh, quanta Tedeschi, Scamponetto. As far as one of the storms, about 20 Germans have been there. They went down the valley. Says, oh, aye. So, left him, went down. The tree started to thin out the bottom, and the road turned down, and we up, and we up. I've just got where the tree started to thin. We started to get a burst of our machine gun fire, like. They spotted us, you know. So we wormed our way back. Tell the corner commander, I said, nobody down there, like. I says, well, they heard the machine gun fire. And come back. So anyway, it was late afternoon again, and they brought an anti-tank gun up. A bloody big 17-pounder. Aye. A bloody sergeant was as big as a gun, artillery. And he was around and just that and the other. His job was to hit that pillbox, you know. So I was wearing a fob. I said, will you? I heard his friend. I said, will you hit it? Hit it? He said, I put it on straight through the fucking slit, he said. He was about disturbed next morning because he didn't get a chance to change the orders. Said, we have to stay put because we're pulling back later on when NATO's cleared. But there was a company out of the 9th Battalion were taking the woods on the right of us, about a quarter of a mile away, and they were worming away through that wood, and they brought you out just next to this pillbox. I was showing up on the morn, about 8 o'clock in the bloody morn there, way in the distance, you could see them weird. Oh, maybe 20 minutes, half an hour, 10 minutes. Say the little figures coming out the top. It was a pretty big wall, you know, as high as that, like, and the pillbox was stuck up there. Three or four of them come out, and another one. Some understand, there must be some Tommy guns, you know, like, just in case any popped his head out the top. Another bloke bunked one up under his shoulders, and he must have stuck a grenade through the slit and dropped down. Bang! You know, then one was climbed over the other to get onto the road. Then after that, you could hear pop, 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 and we up. Well, 20 minutes was all over. And they got a bag of prisoners, about 120, I think, something like that. And then that was cleared, and I think the 9th Battalion must have stayed there for that flank. We had to pull back and away again. My God. A bit of teamwork, like.
Who was your platoon commander at this point?
Mine was a bloke, it was his first time in action. He got killed at the Primorsoli Bridge, you know. Holmes, they call him. Big fat lad with glasses on. He's a bit green, but he's not figuring him at all, you know. And another one was ginger-headed bloke, Christ almighty. Oh dear, my God. Holmes was his company commander.
Who was battalion?
Roberts. Roberts was one, I think. Was it Roberts? Was that the name? Which, yeah, there's got, yeah, I can't say you got that many, you know, but Holmes was definitely 14th Platoon Commander. He was all right, like. He would take them right.
Who was battalion commander?
Jackson.
I thought he'd be...
Lidwell. Big wild Irishman, Lidwell. Aye, it's come out the Royal. Jackson got killed at the Marath. Lidwell was second in command and he took over. Big Bob Lidwell. 6 foot tall with a broken moustache. Calico, you know. Aye, he is. And, where the hell did we go from there? Oh, come, made our way back. Went on the right on the coast, but the following afternoon, we'd start the bloody mountain rail. What a long track was leading up into the mountains, you know. It was a road like, and plodded away up there. Now and again, a few shots went off, but you know what I mean? And there wasn't particularly any Germans in that area, it must have been Italians. And we got on the top of this, after a bloody climb, it was a big plateau, you know, and you could look down and you could see the convoy out at sea. It looked nearer than it actually was, you know. I had to drop anchor there for the night, because there was another point we had to attack at dawn. It was called in the valley over here, we had to get it from the rear. So the coke strip come up, and we got, first time I got a tin bacon, wasn't bad, an attack, you know. And we got a tin of corned beef and this, that, and that was our rations for about 3 bloody days. So I know after that. And anyway, the company commander said, we're staying here tonight, we're moving out in the morning. He said, we'll brief you first thing in the morning, what we've got to do. I was just lying about. Well, when dawn broke next morning, we got a hell of a bloody display. Oh, there's about 20-odd junkers come over there from the main Catania airfield who were going to bomb the convoy. They couldn't get near the bloody convoy. They're throwing everything, throwing destroyers at them and the lad. And anyway, the Spitfires, Malta was only over there, the Spitfires come out the sun. Well, it was an experience. We weren't looking at our battle, we were looking across it, you know. We were up here and they were swooping down the valley. Well, and then the Germans made a run for it, down the coast and went out of sight. But if they knocked one out, the Spitfires knocked about 11 or 12 out while we were watching. I don't know. Well, they were sitting ducks, you know. And then we got the job of next morning, right, we're moving. There's a strong point, we're up on the top, covering the valley. That a name for the valley, I don't know what it was. And so my hope was tight eyes anyway. But we're attacking us from the rear. A long bloody car track came going up like that, you know. Past a little farmhouse, and two Sicilians stand there. Americani, Americani. No, we're not fucking Americans. We're Italians. And, anyway, you got where the strong point was, there was a farmhouse there. So there wasn't anybody firing out, like. So I just took a section forward, like, blocks covering on the right and left, you know. Just took a section forward, and there was a couple of old farmers in there. There was no women there, but a couple of old blokes in there farming. Went round this little bit yard thing around, and well, had the loveliest pillbox that you couldn't see it from the other side. What they'd done was a cliffside there. The shot away thrown here, stepped it down, and had a hole in the cliff side. Aye. And they left it. Because I said anybody come to that valley would have something on the plate. Aye. Good work as the Italians, you know. And anyway, they'd abandoned it because right across the valley you could see 3 or 4 figures, high tailed, all they were well out of range, you know. And we had to stop there. Pulled out late at night, but all these fellas, these little foul lads with a few hands running, you know, we knocked a couple of hands off. Company commander gave them a note for them, that, you know, knocked a couple of hands, made a bit of stew. It doesn't matter what I don't know what else like. But.
Were the Sicilians quite friendly towards you as you did meet them?
They didn't seem, you know. The ones we met at that time, anyway, they hadn't paid apprehensive and out like that, you see. And they were probably glad to get rid of the Germans, or they were probably hoping for the best, but Mussolini tried to brainwash them, I think, about what a bloody horrors we were, baby eaters and women rapers and all that. And we didn't do that sort of thing, to be honest. But anyway, there was a lot of bloody marching from A to B, you know, and they didn't say where you going to, and you didn't have a notebook to write it down like. But we're on the march again. And mine, it was bloody rough marching over hills and down dales and this, that and the other. And finally the battalion was, it appeared the battalion was in that area again. what to make for Catania. A long way off, you know. And went out proper formation, a company all there and one over there, and off we went, like. And where we were, there was one little thin narrow road, you know. We kept off the road, and we hit one place that was just open ground, and oh Christ, must have stretched a mile, a couple of miles. And it was all tomatoes, them oval tomatoes, you know, going up like that. They weren't all red, mind, but we were ploughing straight through them. Of course, the Germans was on high ground over there, throwing shells over and such as that. And we just kept going, like.
Did you meet any booby traps on the roads or houses or wherever?
Not then, we didn't, not then at all. No, we didn't get into many buildings, we were just, you know, and we knew the Germans were getting a bit thick then, like. And then they had pulled back as we moved forward. We had some tanks with us, and this, that, and the other. And then there was another part of this open plain. We were in wireless contact, you know, stop, you know, you had to stop. Don't know how long we'll be here, like. Platoon over there, one there, and this, that, and the other. And there was like a long, it was a bit of a wadi, like, an open ground, you know, it was a, oh, it stretched a few hundred yards, like a bloody freak of nature. And it was an ideal place, like, save you digging in, you know. Got the platoon in there, and I've chucked there. I said, well, it'll only be a half an hour, or what? Well, that, 2 or 3 hours before we got the order to move. But anyway, it was twisting and twining. Well, the youngest come down, I was talking to Holmesy, the platoon commander. The young says, hey, he says, there's a bloody cave up there. He says, there's some smoke coming outside. And I says, all right. I said, not be Germans, like, they wouldn't have lit a fire. So me and Holmesy went up, and it was like a bloody cabin, you know, and you couldn't say it was sick, and the smoke was coming out, was nobody's business. But I said, now to get worried about, so I'll go in. I went in, like, God almighty, stuck there. And it's full of Italian civilians, you know, must have been 20 of the buggers, and kids running about, you know. And what had happened, maybe with the bombing on the plane had been terrified, they'd come up there, they were hiding, they, you know, they couldn't believe when they looked at you. And anyway, the little kids was running there, you know, and they used that emergency chocolate, didn't they? And that's like bloody concrete, you know, and you must have got that out and broke it up. Well, they were eating it, like, well, you won them over straight away, like, see? And he was looking around, I said, oh, let's get out of here. And there's one woman, a few old hags around her, she was mourning and growing what a bloody state she was in. Well, she says, she must have been hit, you know, she must have been hit with shrapnel or something, you know, I wonder if there's anything we can do. They've gone out and had a look. And they saw one saying, Bambini, Bambini, I says, she's having a kid, man. He said, let's get out of here. Yeah, funny that, isn't it, you bugger? And then we got orders to move, and then we started to really run into trouble then. We got near a place called Lantini. It's a big, long, straggly place, you know. Maybe as big as Durham, but not more old-fashioned than Durham, broken down buildings. Big plane there, and we were a bit near each other. 9th Battalion's there, we were back here in the 6th, and bloody German dive bombers come over, and I didn't know he had any left, and he knocked about half a dozen of the 9th Battalion carriers out. Aye. We lost note. And then the 9th Battalion moved off there in the lead. We had to follow them.
Did you have to fight for Lantini? Did you have to fight for this town?
For Lantini. Not in the true sense of the word. The 9th Battalion had to lead. But the thing was, our paratroopers had dropped at this Primosoli Bridge, which was 25, 30 miles away, you know. And most of them had dropped out, which happened to the paratroopers. There was just a few of them there that managed, including the colonel, that dismantled the charges on the bridge and held the bridge for so long. But they'd lost the bridge, but the Germans couldn't get back on to put the charges back, you see. But we had to be there at the earliest possible moment, so bloody fast march, because the Germans was trying stumbling blocks. The 9th Battalion had to lead through Lantini. We followed them about a bloody half an hour's duration, and the 6th Battalion followed us. So off we went. Well, one of the 6th Battalion six-pounders, he must have had a roving commission, because he'd went over the rough ground, right away over the top. It was very rough, you know, and this bloody road went way down before you got into Lantini. It was a bloody old stone bridge there, and there was the only way to get in, and out to something. Well, he'd had a 6 pound up here. What he'd done is the Germans had fallen back, he'd knocked two German tanks out on there. He'd knocked them out on the bridge, and he kept putting rounds and he knocked them off the bloody bridge. And they were there. And a few bodies lying about. And then we pulled in, did a sharp right, going down this street. It was bloody red hot. And these Sicilian lasses was running out, you know, with jugs of water. And they were giving the Germans on the way out, they were giving us a drink on the way in. Well, I thought it was good that night. And down we went. And the 9th Battalion was tacking the cream off the cake, you know what I mean, like, we hadn't time to stop. We had to clean up after them. Then the 6th Battalion was doing the main clean up after us, like. And there were skirmishes in there, rod sniper, and one thing and another. We turned around this street. It was a pretty long straight about from here to the end house, down there. And he had a machine gun, he established a machine gun position up there, you know, and he blasted them up the bloody street. So what we did, we had EY rifle earlier on, you know, but we lost it. You could put a little cup on the end of your rifle, you put a charge in, a 68 grenade, put a blank cartridge in, and the gas would blow it out, you know. Well, it was a double charge. It exploded on impact, blew a hole in the wall, and then it was like a vacuum charge. I don't know how it worked, but sometimes blow a hole in the next wall. So if you wanted to be next straight, it was a shortcut, but we didn't have it. So anyway, we only had about 4 Shermans with us at the time. They called one of them up, and he come down that bloody straight to charge of the Light Brigade. He just kept going. There's no anti-tank, which he was lucky. So we just charged down after him, and he didn't stop. He run straight in that building at the bottom. Sort of get a headache. And there's that. I didn't know. He found out. One or two 9th Battalion lads kept lying here and there, you know, and such as that. They kept going. Now we got through this after a bit, we got through this Lentini, and the road wound round, and that was the main road away to Catania, miles away. And on the left it looked like a bloody big orchard, but it was full of these prickly things, and one prickly pears or what. So it's safe far down, the poor little Jerry, his name had about 15 years old, crying for his bloody mother, come up the side. He tried his arms and ammunition away. He must have been listening to Hitler talking while they're tired, you know. His helmet was all big, it was on his ears keeping it up. What a state he was in. One of the lads said, bend him over and I'll stick his bin straight up his ass. And I said, let the poor little bugger go. I said, he frisked him like him. I said, the 6th Battalion might, if he's lucky, the 6th Battalion will knock him off. But I said, the intelligence, he was a kid, like, he'd had out to tell, he would tell it, see. Said, one of the intelligence men might get someone out of him. So it's a shame to knock him off at that age. And then off we went, like, Christ, marching all night.
You must have been pretty tired by this time.
You're tired, but you know everybody else was, you know, and you knew where you were going to give in, like.
Were you getting much sleep over these 2 or 3 days?
Well, if you dust down for an hour, you've got an hour's sleep, you say, you know, and this, that, and the other. So come on, time to go, we're going, and this, that, and the other. But you didn't get a night's sleep as such, like, you know, you weren't able to. I mean, the night we were overlooking Noto, where the lads was able to sleep, say, just 2 or 3 old sentries, like, just tapping turns, but you got to sleep, you snatch your sleep when you could, like. We weren't exhausted, like, but anyway, the 9th Battalion was about to really. So I was in front of us then, I think, and eventually they had reached the bridge, you know, and they contacted the paratroopers, and the paratroopers had put them in the picture. And then we got there, and we were behind the 9th Battalion, and then next morning, didn't know organised, they said, well, there's obviously the Germans would be the other side, you know, the bloody river, especially the other side, there was like bulrushes as high as that ridge up there, you know. Thick like a jungle. The bridge was there. After that was open ground on the right side, and thick olive groves on this side. Left after the you crossed the river, you know. You see that at the distance, like. Only there was a sunken road up there, about 400 to 500 yards up there. No, not on the map, you know. You had a whole bloody paratroop regiment in there, you know. Why? Nobody knew about that. And anyway, about early hours next morning, maybe 7 or 8 o'clock, the 9th Battalion had attacked in open daylight. See? Why, the paratroop colonel was there, like, he'd contact them, a bloke called Pearson, they said, and he pulled his paratroops back then, but he, because 9th Battalion was covering the bridge, and he said, why, he's concentrating on the bridge, like, he said, you can't attack across the bridge. So the river wasn't that deep, we started wading the bloody river. Well, they're getting cut to bits, man. Some were out and all, let them fall back. So the thing was, 8th Battalion's attacking there, 2 o'clock this afternoon. Well, the lads are saying, no fucking what? Not in broad daylight, we're going tonight. But that's your mind, I don't know what happened. But anyway, the last, now before the consulate, said, you're going in tonight, man. It was absolutely stupid. Wasn't being brave, it was being suicidal, you know. So we had to go in night time. It was after midnight.
What are your memories of going in, finding your way across the attack?
Across the, when we fall across the bridge.
When you went in, yeah.
Well, before that, I would say the first morning, when the night would check, we'd had to move forward, like, morning, not in line, but just in case of any counterattack. And they are still occupying some high, daylight, they had a company occupying some high ground down there. But during the night, there'd been a counterattack with Italian armoured cars. And they nearly got sort of 9th Battalion headquarters. But that had an anti-tank one where the road bent, you know. There was a concrete block there the Italians had built. They had a 6-pounder behind there, and they'd rather chopped them up. They were lying all over the road. And the company commander said, I'm going to have a look down there, see what's what. He says, come down with me. That was to me, like, and now I picked me and went down. He was as sick as a dog. Oh, they're starting to burn in flesh and all that, you know. They were lying all over the bloody place. And Christ, what a mess I made. I was kept pounding, knocking one round after another down, you know. And these blokes, this platoon or company of 9th Battalion, whatever on the top, they were just putting small arms fire down, you know. They just butchered them, like. And they were Italians. But anyway, our attack was to go in that night. Well, this Pearson, the paratroop bloke, he contacted our colonel and Lidwell, and he said, leave the bridge to the last. He says, well, he told me, so I intend to do that. Like, I'm putting 2 companies over first. Well, he says, a few hundred yards down the river, like upstream, he says, you can get across, it's only about that high. He said, I'll lead them across, and he did. Aye. He led 2 rifle companies over there. Well, the order was, we were down as near the bridge as possible then. There was us and B Company. And we had to go up the right side of the road. We, from where we got over, they had to go up the left side of the road. A and D Company had to clean the holly groves or whatever and throw there. You see, but when they got over and established, that to send very lights up, green over red or green, sort of that. But they got the bloody ammunition wet crossing the river. They couldn't, you see. Sitting there like funnies waiting. And you could either, they were involved then, you could see the machine, hey, German, you could differentiate between German and enemy weapons at that time, they were. You could either has gone, the hero was going one thing or another. The funniest, there was a War Office bloke there, we didn't know nothing about this, but there was a bloke come over on a bike at a piece, he was a War Office correspondent. He'd been over there, the colonel was over there, Lidwell, he's shouting, where the hell's the company? And he'd come back with a bike and tell our company and get over as quick as you can. So I did a mad gallop over there. Because you knew we'd have fixed line on the bridge, you know.
So you went over the bridge?
We went over the bloody bridge at double time, like. We went first, and then B Company followed us. But we got over before he really tumbled and then opened up, like, you know. But it was dry walls, farm buildings there, and farther up was farm buildings, quite big, you know. Little dry walls, they were hiding behind there, there was bridge. He was fighting fixed line, mostly tracers, thank God, because you could find out where he was, you know. Grades gone off, and Lidwell, he left the second in command in charge over there. He was shouting for in D Company's down here, B Company's straddle here, we were over here, and he's in the middle of the bloody road with his revolver in his hand. He's shouting, come out, you German bastards, and fight like men. I said, there's no way, they've got any sense of stuff. So anyway, there was a platoon start to clear, I think it was sort of. No, we only had 2 platoons. No, we only had 14, 15 platoon. We left a platoon miles back. There was a point on the flank they weren't sure about. Why, I didn't know. We left 13 platoon there, that's right, we had two platoons. And 15 platoon cleared the farm buildings there. We had to scurry up the road, and he was, what he'd done, he dug in, there was a cellar there, you know, and he shot all through the wall at the bottom, and he had a really good position, say. Well, we had to watch his belts, like, and when he stopped firing, changing belts, he'd get a bit farther forward till we finally got open and got a few grenades in, like, and that closed him down. But they were firing from all arts and parts, man. And then we just got involved, and he was coming out the olive groves. He was counter-attacking in the middle of our attack. There was British, must have been British killing British and Germans killing Germans, you know, the way it was going at that time. And then the heat died off a bit. The B company was coming up on the left under that Lewis, and we were up the side, going up this side of the road. At that time, we didn't have out the simple road, you know. We were making good time, not knowing where the hell we were going.
This was night time still?
Night time, oh, this was about maybe 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, just at a guess, like. And anyway, where the sunken road, this little main road, such it was, joined this sunken road, he had a machine gun position and he opened up. They were coming down the bloody wall. Of course, we were crawling up, it was only that deep, we were crawling up the gutter. D company, B company's trying to get up on the left. There was a wall of bloody fire coming out. You could put your hand out and get a handful, you know. And a clever boy up here was shouting, "Come on, Tommy," you know. He's shouting, one of the bravest, he's shouting, "Come on, Tommy." He didn't know us a knee, like. So we're only about, from here to that bush shelter, and he was firing down the road. And I says to Holmesy, I said, "Look," I was actually shouting, "Look," I said, crawl a few yards farther up." And Jones, Iago Jones, with us again, like. He stuck to me like shit to a blanket. And I said, "Let's get up a little bit." I said, "Put a very light up." I said, "Well, me and Jones, you had a grenade apiece, said he." I said, "We'll see what's happening when the light goes up." I said, "Well, grenades. Now we'll run in as quick as we can, charging." Right. Well, he's new in action. He was so bloody excited. You know what he did? We were up there. Instead of finding a bloody thing today, fight along the bottom. Like anti-tank shell. Well, it's only a flare, you know, guns up. But the only thing I can imagine what happened, before we crossed the river, he was mortaring like hell, you know. He knew we were there. But when he realised we were over the river, he couldn't use his mortar. It was a near range. He was probably hitting his own troops. I can only imagine that they'd been priming the bombs, you know, putting the nose caps in. He must have had half a dozen or more on the parapet. And when they'd stopped using the mortars and concentrating on the spandau, they'd forgot about them. And the only thing could have happened, like getting the poles off, when Holmesy fired that long body, must have ignited them. That was the start of my bloody hearing deterioration. And there was a big as bloody crash, Christ almighty. And up went the Germans a lot. There's one boat, the screams was terrible. I don't know what had happened to him. It must have been cut to bits. The smoke and the debris cleared, you know. Well, we had to leave the road then. And this sunken road was quite wide down there. What we could say, we didn't realise the time. There was a bloody regiment stretching the way down there. And there's more like just a gutter this side, but about 4 or 5 feet deep. We went round and we hit that far, went down in a half circle. There was a machine gun nest over there, had been harassing every bugger, firing over, you know. So we went that way to knock him out, like. So a few was at the stop here, and we were shouting, "Come on, C Company, come on, 14 platoon," and tut, 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 tut. And the other buggers went round towards the river, got round behind them, and they got up front, knocked them out from behind. But when dawn broke next morning, he reinforced it again, he had another really machine gun nest in there. Now we went round like that. We hit this, what was the tail end of the sunken road, winding the way up. It was about 5 feet wide and 5 or 6 feet deep in some places. Overgrown, a little bit this, that and the other. It was a good position, like, but we were near, you see. D company and them on the left, near, we'd had it so rough. They couldn't get past this sunken road because he was in strength, you know. And he was counter-attacking them and picking off where they could. Dawn broke, and there was a German machine gun coming back, following the route. They weren't coming, running away like, they'll come back. They'll maybe realise if the British come over in strength, they're going to have another position back here to cover, like, to cover the others getting back. But they come to run right into us, like, about, I think, about 11, 12, 13, 14 of them. and shut the buggers up like. And there was one, just the officer, he'd been hit with his lying doggo. And the sod, maybe half an hour later, went down, got the machine gun, turned it that way, you know, in case anyone come up the ditch. And he was lying there, and anyway, he shot one of our lads, he shot him. But they had the spandau there, facing down the ditch, and his ginger officer, what the car was it, Roberts? He dropped down straight behind, and he could have been half for a bust out of his own machine gun.